This podcast of Left, Right, and Center is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
President Bush stumps for his Iraq war policy. Torture, do we or don't we? And will a cup of Joe replace rummy punch at the Department of Defense? Hello again and welcome to Left, Right, and Center, public radio's civilized yet provocative antidote to the screaming talking heads that dominate political debate. Matt Miller is away on business today. I'm Mark Cooper, The Nation magazine, sitting in as moderator. Representing the left is Robert Scheer, a syndicated columnist based at the San Francisco Chronicle and editor of the new investigative internet magazine, TruthDig.com. Bob joins us from Maui, where he's on vacation. We're also joined by a special guest on the right today, David Bowes. He's vice president of the Libertarian Cato Institute and author of the recently published Libertarianism, a Primer. And Arianna Huffington is with me in our home studio representing the progressive independent blogosphere with her blog, HuffingtonPost.com. Well, President Bush has now given his second in a series of three major speeches on the status of the war in Iraq. Last week, he unveiled his national strategy for victory in Iraq. This week, he's focused on what he's called economic progress there. David Bowes of the Cato Institute, let's begin with you. After watching Bush's popularity rating sink to an all-time low, is he now making any progress in better making his public case for Iraq?
Well, I'm not sure that he is, although the New York Times did have a poll this week that said his popularity had gone back up from 35 to 40, so I suppose that's some sort of jump. It seems to me, though, that these speeches are not making front page news. There's not really anything new in them, and they are not arresting the slide in public support. And I've noticed recently that public support for the Iraq War is falling faster than it did during the Vietnam War. Now, that may be a product of the 24-hour news cycle and everything, but it doesn't look good for getting a majority back in support of this, and I don't think that he had a particularly plausible argument for either victory or the substantial success of Reconstruction.
Arianna, in Bush's first speech last week, he seemed to slightly better come to terms with who we were actually fighting in Iraq and made those delineations between the al-Qaeda terrorists and then conceded that, in fact, the majority of the folks we were fighting are disgruntled Sunnis. Is this a step forward in at least a public explanation of the war?
Actually, I thought this was one of the funniest things he tried to do, to kind of to give a semantic redefinition of what was going on there. And he, as you know, stopped calling them insurgents and said we now should be calling them rejectionists or Saddamists are terrorists.
And then Rumsfeld had some incredible acronym for them that I can't even remember. But
it just shows how unreal this is. You know, it's really a PR war they're fighting instead of really concentrating on fighting the war in Iraq. And the reason for that is that, as Howard Dean said, this war is not going to be won. In fact, if he had been even more truthful, he would have said this war has been lost. And the war has been lost both on the ground and even more important for the future of this country and for the future of our safety, the war for the hearts and minds that every once in a while they remember is rather important in fighting terrorism has also been lost big time. And the war at home has been lost. I mean, the war for the hearts and minds of the American people when it comes to Iraq has been lost. And the only thing that's helping the president right now is some good news on the economy and the disarray among the Democrats.
Bob Scheer, is this really a debate now between Democrats who'd like to see the troops come out over the next 6 months or a year and Republicans who, in any case, are going to pull the troops out in the next 2 years and it'll begin right after the elections?
Well, I think the debate in the Democrats is between those who have some courage and honesty and those who don't. And clearly, Hillary Clinton has come to stand for those who are totally opportunistic and want to duck this issue. So, I think it's a very important debate to have. I mean, do you lie to the American people, or do you speak honestly, or do you pander? And I think there are going to be an increasing number of Republicans who realize this has been a disaster. I think the real problem for the president, by the way, that New York Times poll did not show any improvement on Iraq. It showed, as you say, on the economy, because we're having both, guns and butter, and there's a price to be paid up the road. But clearly, the tax breaks and all the other things that have done to the sort of caricature of Keynesianism that has been employed has given us a good quarter. And so people are feeling a little bit better about that. But the actual statistics on the war have continued to go downward. I would point out this is Charles Krautheimer has a column in The Washington Post today where he points out that this administration has given Saddam Hussein an incredible publicity boost in the handling of that trial. And one point I would make about that is that here we have Saddam Hussein being tried for war crimes committed in 1982, which is before the famous Rumsfeld-Hussein handshake and before the U.S. embraced Hussein. So it's kind of a bizarre thing that this guy is being tried on war crimes, which I do think he's committed and deserves to be tried, hopefully by an international court and in an impartial setting. But these crimes were committed before the U.S. embraced Saddam Hussein. And so what is the message that's being sent out? Do we embrace this torturer and murderer and embrace them for a decade until we found them inconvenient?
David Buzz, as you know, just a little bit more than a week from now, we're going to see elections for the National Assembly in Iraq. We can already anticipate that the supporters of the war, including the Bush administration, are going to use this properly or improperly as a symbol of great progress toward democracy in Iraq. From where you sit, are those elections going to get us closer to a resolution of the conflict or exacerbate the already present threat of civil war?
Oh, I think they'll probably move us somewhat closer. From what I can tell, they are likely to have more people voting than they've had previously, that more people are coming to recognize that elections are being held and they are selecting governments and it makes sense to be part of it. So I think that probably the president will get a boost next week when the elections, I think, will go well. And even support for his Iraq war policy will probably go up. In the long run, you still have a lot of problems making this country work. My colleague just came back from Kurdistan, and he reports that things are pretty good in Kurdistan. There is an economy starting to grow there. You feel reasonably safe, but this is because Kurdistan is a largely autonomous country, as it has been for about 10 years under U.S. air cover. If it can maintain that autonomy, it is likely to be a relatively liberal center of enterprise and tolerance in the Middle East. But the question is, will something happen after the election or after the Americans do pull out, which probably will happen within a couple of years, that would change Kurdistan's status?
Ariana, what about the rest of Iraq? I think you probably agree with David about the situation in Kurdistan, which, as he said, has actually been fairly reasonable since the early 90s.
Well, I think it's really interesting. We have to go to Kurdistan to get some good news. But I'm more interested in really asking David about a lot of his fellow conservatives and libertarians, because the Cato Institute, is my understanding, has been opposing the war. And I'm fascinated, and I'm tracking all the conservatives who are coming out against the war, starting with Senator Chuck Hagel. Even Senator Brownback, for heaven's sake, on CNN the other day was talking about bringing some of the troops home at the beginning of 2006, which makes this a really fascinating political realignment with Hillary Clinton to the right in conventional terms of Senator Brownback, and co-sponsoring the flag-burning amendment with Senator Bennett.
Let's get David a quick response to that, and we'll get Bob in as well. David?
I have been anticipating that kind of realignment really since the end of the Cold War, and I haven't seen as much of it as I would have hoped. I do think that for a traditional conservative, the right attitude toward a war like this is to say it is not within the capability or the authority of the United States to go around remaking the world in its own image, and a modest conception of the powers of the federal government would have led you to oppose this. I think since the Florida imbroglio and maybe since the Clinton impeachment, there's been such a polarization in Washington. It's red state, blue state, pro-Bush, anti-Bush, that everybody thinks they're supposed to line up on the side of their team. And now that we're past the 2004 election and Republicans can start looking ahead to the post-Bush era, I think we are going to see more interesting arguments going on within the Republican Party. And Arianna's right that there are a few Republicans, although I have to say still far too few, who are really questioning the war. Congressman Walter Jones of North Carolina is another example, a traditionalist conservative, mountain Republican, who is calling for withdrawal. Whereas on the Democratic side, as you know, there are not very many people calling for withdrawal. Mm.
Bob, who's more divided, the Democrats or the Republicans over this?
I'm sorry?
Which party is now going to enter into a bigger crisis over support in Iraq?
I think the Democrats or the Republicans? I think the Democrats are in a serious impasse, and I don't see how they can support a candidate who repeats the failure of John Kerry in the last election. When Kerry was said, would you support the war knowing what you know now? The answer clearly should have been no. We were lied to. The Senate was lied to. The Congress was lied to. The people were lied to. And, of course, I wouldn't support it. He didn't have the courage to do that. And they played political games and lost the election.
But by 2000...
Hillary's going to do that, she does not deserve to be supported. And for once, I'm in solid agreement with Arianna Huffington on the Hillary question. I've been an apologist for Hillary for years now. And it's outrageous that this late in the day she can't come out against this war. I do want to say something about the conservative movement. I mean, neoconservatism is an oxymoron, really, in terms of what's been presented. These people are not, there's nothing conservative about them. They are ex-Trotskyists, with all due respect to other friends of mine who are ex-Trotskyists. They believe in permanent revolution. They believe in, you know, breaking eggs to make an omelet. They believe in all of the things that, revolutionaries of the left have believed in. They believe tumult is good. They believe confusion is good. They believe out of that will somehow come a better world, and these people are radicals, and they managed to gain control of the foreign policy agenda of the United States. And as I say, they should have been rejected by Republicans all along. It has nothing to do with national security or patriotism. It has to do with a crazed, I would argue, a view of changing the world in an image that you hold to.
Arianna, and we've got a minute to go before the break. In just those 60 seconds, isn't Hillary Clinton going to be off the hook in a way, because by the time the 2008 campaign really gets underway, aren't we all anticipating that the Bush administration is already going to be heavy into troop withdrawal from Iraq?
Well, that's obviously what she's banking on. But I sincerely hope that Democrats in the primaries are not going to let her be off the hook, because that shows precisely the kind of inauthenticity, the kind of triangulating that her husband may have been able to get away with, but she won't, for two reasons. One, because this is about war and peace. This is not about domestic issues. It's about life and death. And also because she does not have his charisma, she does not have his charm to get away with a kind of absolutely blatant, transparent, calculating mendacity that's permeating everything she says and does.
Nor does she have support among women that Bill Clinton has. But still to come, do we or don't we use torture, and is Joe Lieberman on track to replace Donald Rumsfeld? First, you're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Find more Left, Right, and Center programs and podcasts at kcrw.com.
Welcome back to Left, Right, and Center. I'm Mark Cooper, sitting in as moderator for Matt Miller. Robert Scheer is with us from Maui. Arianna Huffington is with me in Santa Monica. And our special guest on the right, David Bowes, author of Libertarianism, A Primer, comes to us from Washington, D.C. The U.S. position on the use of torture in clandestine overseas prisons led the news this week as Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made her way through Europe. What she actually said, however, is up for dispute. Some think that Condi Rice renounced torture by the U.S. as well as rendition of prisoners to governments that indeed torture. Others think Condi did a verbal tap dance that rivals former President Clinton's performance on the meaning of the word is. Bob Scheer, can you figure out what Condi really said this week?
Well, you know, the problem she has is that most people in the world not only reject torture as immoral, but they also understand it's inefficient. And so, you know, when she went to Europe, the people understand very well. First of all, they've had their own colonial experiences. They understood how lousy the intelligence was they got from tortured Algerians or Vietnamese or other people in their past history. And we had a very good example of the inefficiency of torture, which sort of cuts through the whole debate. You know, oh, we're under tremendous pressure, so we have to do this. And it could not have a better example. As reported in today's New York Times, Ibn Al-Libi, the subject of DITSM number 044-02, which I've written about, the Defense Intelligence Agency told us in February 2002 that we got lousy information from this guy, which was the basis of the claim that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were linked. That was the foundation of that argument, that the president advanced that argument a full 8 months after being told it was based on false information. But what we didn't know until this story in today's New York Times is that the information came from a prisoner captured in Afghanistan, but who had been sent to Egypt. He's a Libyan, but he was sent to Egypt to be treated by their cultural norms, according to the government spokesman. And he lied. He lied under torture. And he gave this false information, absolutely the most important thing we needed to know about. Was there a connection between Saddam Hussein and the people who blew up the crash planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon? The fact is there was no connection, but that was believed by the U.S. government based on someone tortured who told his torturers what they wanted to hear. So we have a vivid example of how torture does not work.
David Bowes, did Condi Rice reverse U.S. policy or merely redefine torture?
Well, I think she may have also been training under Alan Greenspan, who is famously eloquent without actually communicating much information. I think that during the week there has been a shift in the nuance of what she has said, but I think it's true that if you read the sentences very carefully, they are sort of non-denial denials, and it's obviously a very embarrassing situation for a Secretary of State. She's in Europe. There's all this outrage in Europe. If indeed we have these secret prisons in Eastern Europe, then we've put our Eastern European allies in a terrible situation with Western Europe. The Eastern Europeans were so eager to work with America to be free from the Soviet Union. Now they want to be part of the American side, and yet they also want to be accepted within Europe, and they've gotten themselves into a situation now where they're very unpopular under a lot of criticism in Europe, and I think Condi has been trying to cover several bases there and not quite let us know exactly what's going on. Clearly, there have been things happening that most Americans would not support, although I will bet you that more Americans are more sympathetic to torture than you would normally think from listening to civilized talk shows. I think there are a lot of Americans out there who say, by God, if these people are attacking us, are planning another 9/11, then we should do whatever it takes to get them. And so the president may know that there is this kind of support there, as well as the European opposition and the general media unrest about it.
Ariana, you know what I heard Condi Rice say? I kind of heard her say, yeah, maybe we tortured some people in the past, but we tortured everybody we needed to for these wars, so we may not have to do it again. Am I being too cynical?
Oh, no, I don't think you're being cynical enough, which is unusual for you, Mark. No, I think that it's really tragic. If we can step back for a minute and see what's happened to the American reputation and goodwill in the world since September 11th is absolutely tragic. I mean, the way this administration has squandered it on every level across the world, from Paris to Dubai. And Condi Rice's trip has been an embarrassment. And at the same time, you had the president speaking to the Council of Foreign Relations, the foreign policy establishment of this country, which also bears a huge responsibility by not questioning the intelligence before the war, and speaking without taking questions. And it is unbelievable that a group, which is after all dedicated to the pursuit of truth and information, would let him get away with that. That's where we've gotten. And at the same time, let's not forget one other very significant thing this week. Paul Wolfowitz, the architect of the Iraq War, coming out and saying what John Kerry was not willing to say during the last campaign and is saying only now, that if he knew then basically what we know now about the absence of WMD, we should not have invaded.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, I'll throw it to you, Bob Scheer. Was Wolfowitz recanting in his speech the other day before the National Press Club?
I don't care. I mean,
she's
really,
in Maui.
He's gonna be, this is like crushed. Paul's going to be crushed to hear that. But
no, but I mean, this is like McNamara. You know, I remember interviewing McNamara when he was at the World Bank. You know, and suddenly he was this totally reasonable, wonderful person. And then you see a movie like Fog of War. Shouldn't say like. You see the movie Fog of War, where McNamara says, "Oh yes, 3.4 million people died in this war." That he, in the same movie, says he could never have defended, knew was wrong, and so forth. But 3.4 million people died. And who really cares what Wolfowitz says now?
Go ahead, Bob. Then we'll let David jump in. Go ahead. Finish up, Bob, and we'll let David respond to you. Bob Scheer.
Oh, well, it's not a big point. I'm just saying, I mean, these guys, when they have power, they act in an incredibly reckless, destructive way. And then, sure, they can be enlightened after they go and they want to have their popovers in Boston or whatever. They hang out and you know, re-enter, you know, decent society. This problem, let me say something about this torture thing. You know, what is the lesson we're saying? We've been struggling, most of us. I mean, I was in Egypt a long time ago, and anywhere I always went, I said, torture is a bad thing. I mean, you know, whether I was in Eastern Europe, whether I was in the old Soviet Union, wherever, the idea that somehow one would equivocate about torture, and the idea that we sent a prisoner to Egypt. What are we saying? We're saying to the Muslim Brotherhood that was just so successful in this election, you're right. In fact, there is no such thing as a civilized, westernized, modern society, that we're hypocrites. And you know, you look where else. What are we saying in relation to Iran? You know, we put their puppets in power in Iraq. They're convenient to us now, and at the same time, we're starting to object to their having nuclear weapons. So the way we've stirred the pot, the neoconservative assumption is if you just stir the pot, you just smash it against the wall, all those phrases they use, somehow it'll come out better. It doesn't come out better. It comes out worse.
Bob, let me
we've
get,
unleashed some terrible forces in this world
Let me
now.
Get David Bowes in. David from Washington at the Cato Institute. You wanted to chime in on that.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on Bob's comparison to McNamara. I think it's exactly reminiscent of McNamara. And the way I see it is, having wreaked havoc on one small, poor nation, they go to the World Bank or the IMF to wreak havoc on all of them. The policies that these institutions impose do not encourage enterprise and opportunity and markets in these countries. They encourage the centralization of the state and the reliance on the state for economic development. And I think it's just wrong to think that McNamara in some way atoned for what he did in Vietnam by being at the World Bank. And I think we'll find out the same thing will be true with Wolfowitz. It's another example of neoconservatism. They think they can use this multilateral government institution to remake economies in all the developing countries.
Arianna Huffington, we've seen sort of a retreat from the public policy, from the hands-on public policy sphere of some of the original neocon architects of this policy, including Wolfowitz, who's now out to pasture at the IMF. There's rampant
at
the World Bank. There's speculation this week that the next to go is Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and that of all people, he'd be replaced by Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman. How would you react to Holy Joe replacing Rummy?
Actually, that would be good news for me because
I
would think that getting him out of the pretense that he's some kind of democratic elder statesman and clearly identified with the administration would help in terms of the Democratic Party beginning to speak with a slightly less chaotic voice.
So you think that's where he belongs?
Yeah, that's where he belongs. But, I mean, I would hate to see just one more person who was central, not only to the fact that we invaded Iraq, but how we did it, just getting away without any accountability, without any questions asked. And that's where I really hold the foreign policy establishment responsible, because where is Richard Haass of the Council of Foreign Relations? Where is Dick Holbrooke? Where are all these people? As well, of course, as the congressional Democrats whose job it is to demand accountability and exercise oversight.
Bob Scheer, what about your view of Joe Lieberman, who's been very vocal this week in supporting the Bush war policy? Should he just own up and become the Secretary of Defense?
Again, what do I care about Joe Lieberman?
As long as he'll give us a list of things he doesn't care about.
No, I mean, as long as I'm not expected to ever vote for him, I mean, really, why is – first of all, you know, the idea that somehow Republicans are always associated with bad – foreign policy and not Democrats is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, Vietnam, after all, was primarily a Democratic war that Richard Nixon inherited. Democrats are capable of horrible policies internationally, very adventurous policies. I wish we had some old-fashioned conservative isolationists who at least, you know, knew the cost of these enterprises. And Lieberman seems to me to be a totally reckless individual who in no way takes responsibility for the lies that he's absorbed and spread, takes no responsibility to anything goes wrong. The idea that he's considered in any way a respectable person, I mean, it's just shameful. And I don't know how he, you know, why anyone ever went along with the idea of his being a vice presidential candidate of the Democrats. But if he represents the Democratic Party, who needs the Democratic Party?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question. David Bowes, you've got 30 seconds for that one. Go ahead.
I think it would be a brilliant political stroke for Bush. It won't be popular with the left-wing intelligentsia, but to most of the country, it'll look like a government of national unity. The president is taking, as a senior member of his cabinet, the guy who was the vice presidential nominee against him. I think it will give him a real boost. And although I'm not a fan of Lieberman, who I see as a New Deal Democrat on economic issues and an interventionist on foreign policy, I think for the country it'll probably be very popular.
Well, it's time for our famed end-of-show left, right, and center rant with pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Arianna, take about 30 seconds.
Well, I have a blog on the Huffington Post today entitled, What Planet is Bill Clinton Living On? For those of you who missed his appearance on Larry King this week, it's really absolutely stunning. The fact that he refused to say anything relevant or meaningful about the war in Iraq, to criticize the federal response to Katrina, and on top of it, to sound positively giddy about his relationship with 41. Let me just read you one quick line about his visit to Kennebunkport. I had a wonderful time. He took me out in his speedboat and nearly killed me. He was driving so fast. I just loved it. Could he have sounded any more like a giddy schoolgirl?
David Bowes, what's your rant from the libertarian right?
Republicans came to power 10 years ago promising to reduce a government that was too big, too expensive, and too intrusive. Just in the past week or two, they have announced that they want to hold hearings into the bowl championship series of the NCAA. They've announced that they want to subsidize people buying digital TV. But meanwhile, they want to investigate the Nielsen rating system because they're not sure it's fair to all the channels. You get a couple of drinks into a conservative in Washington, and he will say, things like this wouldn't be happening if the Republicans were in power.
Bob Scheer, 20 seconds.
Yeah, I'll also mention truthdig.com, where I have a column called Tonto's Revenge, and it deals with the Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal and Ralph Reed, the Christian Coalition's role in marshaling the supposedly decent Christian forces that ended up helping gambling casinos in violation of their own credo. He got $4 million for it. This is the scandal that will bring down the Bush administration.
My rant, I think right-wing culture vulture Ann Coulter is a buffoon. If I took her seriously enough, I might even find her offensive. What I did find offensive were the self-appointed censors at the University of Connecticut who shouted her down off a stage this week. Shame on Coulter for her repulsive views. Double shame on the students who need a remedial class in the First Amendment. That's all the time we've got today. Thanks to special guest David Bowes of the Cato Institute. His book is Libertarianism, a Primer. Thanks, as always, to Robert Scheer and Arianna Huffington. We had help today from WAMU in Washington, with special thanks to KCRW's chief engineer, Steve Herbert. Our technical director is Ray Guarna, with an assist from David Green. Sarah Spitz produces this program. Matt Miller returns next week. I'm Mark Cooper. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Left, Right, and Center.
I wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
But we know we need each other, so we better call the calling of love.
Audio archives and podcasts of KCRW programs are at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about Left, Right, and Center, email lrc@kcrw.com. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by 89.9 KCRW Santa Monica and kcrw.com.
You've been listening to KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Le Show, a weekly romp through the worlds of media, politics, sports, and show business with satirist Harry Shearer. Check out the podcast of Le Show at kcrw.com.